Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy.
Welly. Hey, good morning, advocates. It's 10 o'clock here in Arizona time. This is our first morning show in, it's been a while, advocates, and I really like these shows. Thank you, Dosha. We are here today, you guys. Joe is going to come in later, Joe Frazier, Love a Pit Rescue. He's out there taking care of all the dogs he's got there at Love a Pit Rescue in Oregon, so hopefully we see him pop in here at the studio later. We can get a little update on what's going on out there, advocates. Today, guys, we got a really cool show, and I'm looking forward to this one. I've been looking forward to this one. Initially started out, first we've got Gene and Lindsay from the Inner Pup in New Orleans, and we can talk about some of the programs they got down there. It's a lot of stuff going on with these guys, advocates. And it's not just about the pit bulls, really. It's really about all the dogs, which is great. One of the things we experienced with LARPO, the Los Angeles Responsible Pit Bull Owners, where we met up for one of their training courses when Joe and I were in Hollywood a few weeks ago, or last month, actually, where all the dogs are involved. Quite a lot of pit bulls, guys, but a lot of the dogs are involved. That's a great thing about organizations like LARPO and the Inner Pup. Don't discriminate against it. It's about all the dogs and what we can do for them. But for me, you guys, you know, it's all about the pit bulls. It's all about the pit bulls. And, of course, I do want to talk about that tonight. Things going on. We've got a lot of things going on in the next 2 months, advocates. August, May, this month, yeah, May and August, I'm going to be out for a while. So the shows that we do are not necessarily going to be Sunday shows. You guys are going to be on the road. So it's kind of a Pit Bull Advocate Tour 2019. We're going to be all over the place, you guys. And this coincides with a little something I'm doing on the side here. I'm back in the tour managing business. So I am going to be gone through May 17th. Through the 25th, doing a West Coast gig, and we're going to try and get the guys, if this means anything to any, get these guys from a band called Conflict, and they're another 80s punk band, really heavy on the animal rights issues out there, so we really hope to sneak them into one of the road shows here on the Pitbull Advocate. It's going to be really exciting. It's going to be like, we do them when we can. If we get one other week this year, one other week there, it just really kind of depends on where I'm at. And, you know, fortunately, we're getting comped motel rooms by the label, so I can do the shows in the room, which is great. Excuse me. But we're going to keep you posted on that. It's going to be really exciting to see how we get through this thing here. You guys, this is a call-in show, and I really want you to call in and talk to Lindsay and Gene and talk about some of the things you're doing at the Inner Pup. And that number that you're going to want to call is 929-477-2860. 929-477-2860. We're going to be giving that number out here a little bit later on. Gene and Lindsay, welcome to the Pit Bull Advocate. I hope you all got your coffee this morning.
Two cups.
Absolutely.
Hi.
Oh, excuse me. Who said two cups?
Lindsay.
Lindsay said two cups. Okay. All right. Yeah. We don't survive here in this place without coffee. Always got to make sure we got it on hand, especially for these morning shows, you guys. Thanks for being here. I actually like these morning shows, Gene, because I know you had some plans tonight. Excuse me. So we remedied that because I don't want anybody to have to cancel out on anything because I didn't want to put this one off because, you know, as you heard there, we got this big thing going on. But Gene and Lindsay, we are going to be in New Orleans here in August, prior on the 25th. And nope, that's not it. That would be August. August. I'm scrolling down. I know I gave you a date. I gave you a date, and I'm not finding it. There it is. August 7th, you guys. Yeah, you're the first date on the East Coast swing here. So we definitely want to get down there. Maybe we can sit out somewhere. We'll do another talk with you guys and play catch-up on what's going on in the world of the inner part.
Sounds terrific. Yeah, we'll
all right.
Get
with you.
Yeah.
Let's have some more fun with this and really get down and actually see what you guys are doing. We even do like to do the live Facebook video stuff. We found in the last time we went down to LA, we did that. And that seems to work out pretty good. So we can try some of that too. Excuse me. So in the meantime, you guys, hey, thanks again for being here, Gene, Lindsay. I guess my first question for you is, when did the inner pup start, and what was the catalyst behind that? What was the driving force behind you saying, I want to do this? And also, how did you come up with the name the inner pup? How does that work out?
I'm going to take the first question. Lindsay and I kind of decided we'll go back and forth. And we are almost 5 years old. We formed a nonprofit specifically because we felt like animal welfare wasn't working in our community. Well, we felt even larger than that, that it wasn't working nationwide for a lot of reasons. And the reasons were mainly that if animal welfare was working, we wouldn't be building bigger and bigger shelters and giving college degrees in shelter management, that we really felt like the center animal welfare needed to be the community and responsible pet ownership. And we weren't seeing as much of that as we wanted to, especially in urban and in rural communities, whereas suburban communities don't quite fit into the same equation. So we decided to work in high-need communities, and our target communities are typically low-income demographics, and we decided to do preventative strategies, to have our programs in prevention so that we wouldn't get to a point where families were surrendering dogs to shelters and families were breeding. So our mission is to elevate empathy, compassion, and responsible pet ownership in high-need communities by providing humane education and affordable resources to people and pets. And so we're very community-oriented, and we'll get into specifics in as you ask us more questions.
Yeah. We're really kind of open here. I don't know if I mentioned before, there's no censor, so if you kind of slip up, I guess, so to speak, don't worry about it. We're really really casual here with this. So I want you guys to be as open as you feel on this, and it really, I want you to express yourselves and don't hold anything back, okay? So with how this goes,
I was going to say, everything that Mom said, on top of that was that the in-need communities and the at-risk communities in New Orleans, like many other cities in nationwide, many of the shelter dogs and cats are coming into the shelters, stray surrenders, from those areas of need. So every city across the nation has something called a target zip code. I'm sure your listeners are well aware, but and those are the communities we reach because the shelter system, the infrastructure is not actually going into the community and talking to those people. So although they're doing wonderful in adoption and rescue, they're not working with the community in prevention.
Why do you think the inner city communities and the rural communities are getting overlooked? we kind of think of these shelters that they serve everybody, you know, if they're in, you know, this big city that they serve everybody, that doesn't seem to be the case. Why are these areas being left out, you think?
Well, I think the answers are pretty obvious. First of all, the shelters are overwhelmed, Patrick. They have so many dogs to contend with, and their job, although outreach is a part of it, it is often overlooked, as is education. And without outreach and education, nothing is going to change within the walls of the shelter. So the biggest problems in animal welfare tend to come from low-income, at-risk communities, because these communities are kind of culturally isolated, and they tend to lack education, and they tend not to be included. And that's one of our goals, is to include members of these communities in our solutions, because these communities and neighborhoods and target zip codes are where the largest challenges in animal welfare come from.
And to add to that, they're being left out of a lot of things. You know, it's not just the animal welfare system that they're being left out of. They're being dropped out of, you know, we work in the schools, and we just read an article that came out a year ago that was 80% of these students have seen violence. You know, and what are we doing with the kids of New Orleans? You know, they're being raised like this. Many of them have seen people, you know, they see red tape when they get off the bus. So how can, how can we be better for their next generation?
Enter the inner pup, where you guys are coming in.
I mean, we like to say, and it's so, so true, just what Lindsay just pointed out, that the same problems that we witness with pets in these communities, it mirrors the same problems that exist with the human population. And it's impossible to ignore that. And that's why education is so critical to any real solution.
And one of the things you guys do, we talked about this, it goes in the education part. You guys have really, really made a difference, as an understatement, I would say, in the heartworm cases that are coming out of New Orleans, in that area. I mean, how big of a problem is heartworm, and why is it so predominant down there? It's a bloodborne disease. Is that correct? The heartworm. So I would imagine being transmitted through mosquito would be one.
It's the only one. The only way heartworm disease is through a mosquito, and it only takes one mosquito. And in New Orleans, we'd like to say that mosquitoes are the state bird. And it really is true.
Oh, yeah.
It's a 12-month-a-year problem. 12-month-a-year problem. And I'll let Lindsay talk a little bit about how we have responded to the problem.
Go ahead, Lindsay.
Well, that's, let's see. Well, we've created pop-up clinics for heartworm prevention. So starting 3 years ago, we started them. There was no one focused on strictly heartworm, that most of the clinics in the area are for vaccines. And so we do have a lot of low-cost vaccination clinics, but nothing specific. And 80% of the dogs that come into the shelter system, roughly, are heartworm positive. And so
80%?
Not only – that's 80? About right.
That's
a lot.
About shelter stray and dogs of low-income owners. That population, the rate of heartworm approaches 80%. And the typical count and the low percentages that are quoted are because they come from veterinary clinics. And the real problem is that our low-income clients it can't afford veterinary health, that eligibility for our clinics is inability to afford veterinary health. So the other irony is that heartworm prevention is prescription medicine, and if you don't go to a veterinary clinic, you can't get a prescription. So our clients are mostly unaware of what heartworm disease even is, and even if they are aware, they can't afford prevention. So they're also a more low-compliant population, which makes prevention compliance, it doesn't happen as often. So,
and there are a lot of times they're the parents of the kids we teach in the schools. And that is, you know, that is the hope also, is to reach everyone in those communities.
What is the average cost of that, the preventative and or the treat? I imagine the treatment, I guess, would depend on the severity of the case, but just kind of a ballpark, as far as people, you know, wanting the preventative and wanting to get on, you know, some sort of treatment or preventative. What is the cost on something like that there?
Well, Lindsay, do you want me to answer that?
Yeah, great.
Okay. Basically, if someone were to see a vet and get prevention, it would cost them, at least $10 a month for prevention. And missing a month of prevention makes the dog very vulnerable in New Orleans to heartworm. If a dog succumbs to heartworm disease and needs treatment, the cost can be enormous. And just as an example, the lowest cost treatment in New Orleans for a treatment that is American Heartworm Society protocol treatment for a 7-pound dog exceeds $500. And it goes up not by severity of disease, but by weight of the dog. Average cost in New Orleans are $1,000 to $2,000 for heartworm treatment.
Wow.
And that's why. So here's our cost, Patrick, just so you know. We do $5 for 3 months of heartworm prevention. We also offer flea prevention for the same cost. We've instituted a heartworm treatment study because our clients' dogs, if they're heartworm positive, have no other option than to come to us. So we instituted a treatment study, and so far, we've been tremendously successful. 11 dogs who have reached the end point of the study have all converted to negative heartworm status. We have 22 dogs enrolled. And this is a protocol that has not been accepted by the American Heartworm Society, but it is anecdotally used in veterinary clinics. And we have instituted this study, and it is working, and we will do it on an ongoing basis because our clients' dogs have no other option other than to succumb to a fatal disease unless we help them.
Yeah. Hey, guys, I think, where is he? I've got it. Oh, man. I have all these really cool things going on here. But that'll work. Hey guys, Lindsay, Jean, Advocates, Joe has just entered the studio. Welcome back, Joe.
Hey, thanks.
Hey, have you been
rested? Hi, Joe.
You've been listening,
Joe?
You've been listening, Joe?
About 5 minutes now.
All right. Chime in when you can. definitely, Joe. If you got any questions here for Lindsay or Gene? Hey, because we're talking with Gene and Lindsay from the Inner Pup down in New Orleans, and I was told, Joe, just keep in mind if you ever head down that way, do not say New Orleans because you'll be laughed out of town.
That's right.
Don't say New Orleans.
Why is that?
I watch these shows. New Orleans. It's kind of like people around here. When I say Prescott, they go, no, it's Prescott. It's like, no, it's Prescott because there's an O. They said, nah, it's Prescott like biscuit. I said, nah. So anyway. I don't know anybody in San Francisco that calls it Frisco. We used to just call it the city. We're going to the city. You're not going to Frisco, y'all. So
we like to call it.
But hey, guys, NOLA. There you go. Joe and I were in NoHo, North Hollywood. NoHo, NOLA.
Yep.
But you guys, how many dogs in the 5 years, or actually just in the time that you've been working on the heartworm treatments and preventatives, as far as the dogs that have come through and have been treated through the Inner Pup, what is your success rate? How many dogs have you actually? It's got to be a lot, but you know, kind of an estimate. How many dogs that have gone through your program for the heartworm?
I can tell you that probably close to 1,000 dogs a year. I know that.
I'm sorry. We've got a thousand dogs. Wait, 1,000
per
dogs
year. No. We see somewhere between 80 and 100. Well, we see between 80 and 100 dogs per clinic, and we do monthly clinics. So that's the best guess I can give you. But what we hope and what we're seeing is that the actual dogs we're treating, that there's an exponential effect in the information that we're getting out there. But basically, we've certainly given out over 10,000 doses of monthly medication. Yeah. And we've put a punctuation point. We've put an exclamation point on heartworm disease. And that's a huge goal for us because I can't even begin to tell you, Lenny can talk about it too, but the shelters, the actual cost, besides the cost and suffering of heartworm disease, our partner in our clinics that is Villa-Lobos Rescue, it's actually the home of pit bulls and parolees, they're our partner in our heartworm clinic. And I have to tell you that their cost for treating heartworm disease on their website, it says 99% of the dogs that enter that shelter are heartworm positive, and their budget is $500,000 to treat heartworm. Patrick, think of what this shelter could do if they weren't burdened with that kind of a cost for a preventable disease. I mean, we're talking about
the disease. Yeah.
Well, and oftentimes they don't. Oftentimes the dogs that are heartworm positive end up getting euthanized. You know, that's really lucky for those dogs that end up at Villa-Lobos because it's not every rescue and shelter does that.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah. Now, speaking of Villa-Lobos, hi, Tia. If somebody wants to shoot Tia a message, I'd love to hear for her. Have her give her the number, 929-477-2860. I'd like to hear from her. Joe, I don't know about you, but we'd kind of like to get Tia. We'd like to get Tia on the show here sometime. You guys.
Right now and see if somebody will call in from there.
Yeah, have anybody give us a call. Because, I was letting you guys, I'm going to be down there on August 7th. We all meet up. Maybe, Joe, if you're available, that's August 7th. It's a Wednesday. So, Joe, if you're up and free and available for that that date. Let's set a show and maybe let you run the studio. We can do a live broadcast from New Orleans and kind of turn it into a Pitbull Advocate on Tour 2019 kind of thing. Joe, you know, of course, we'll talk off here, Joe, about some of these. What's that?
Yeah, I have to tell you that 4 years ago, Villa-Lobos Rescue Center actually did a small fundraiser with different country musicians. Pierre loves country. And it went over to Howling Wolf. It was next door at this big venue, and then everyone funneled into Howling Wolf. So they know Rescue well.
Uh-huh. Awesome.
Yeah.
Good join. May we?
In our early stages of Rescue, it was actually back in season one when Tia was doing Blog Talk Radio after the broadcast of the shows. We actually talked with her for a while. She called us after the show and walked us through conditional use permits for our rescue. So it's been a long time since I've talked to her, though. We kept in contact there for a while.
She's so busy.
Oh, no doubt.
I know she is. She's really, really busy. I know.
I'm going to take a minute out now, Lindsay, while you talk, and I'm just going to put on Facebook that we're on Blog Talk Radio and to call into the Pitbull Advocate.
Yeah, we've got plenty of time here, you guys. We got an hour and 3 minutes left, so let's do this.
That's good. And I did email to you, but I don't know how often she checks her email. She's just so busy. So
yeah, no doubt. As long as she knows we're thinking about her, you know, we'll get that touch with her and definitely get her back. And you guys too, Lindsay and Gene, come on back. And we can always do another show on this. Speaking of Villa-Lobos and pit bulls and parolees, Lindsay, what is we all know the pit bull dogs are hugely popular. As far as the number of dogs that come through the Interpup for vaccinations or treatments, what do you estimate the percentage of pit bull type dogs, mixes and so on included, that are coming through your organization for treatment?
That's an interesting question, because at every clinic we always take a big scan, and sometimes it's 90% of our clinics and sometimes it's, you know, 15% of our clinics. And it really shows what audience we're reaching with our advertising. Our goal is actually to bring in more pit bull owners, and that takes our community ambassadors and canvassing program to really skyrocket. So to reach the pit bull owners that have these heartworm positive dogs that are often breeding and need the education in these target communities, we have very specific people that can reach them. We can't always reach them ourselves. So we have community ambassadors that work in those neighborhoods, that live in those neighborhoods, that reach those owners. But I guess to answer your question is that, you know, it really depends on the clinic. And in New Orleans, most of our bigger dogs are mixed with pit bulls. You can, you know, walking down the street, everything's a pit mix, or it's a little Chihuahua or Yorkie. So we do see a lot of pits.
Yeah. So not only just reaching out to the rural areas and reaching out to the inner cities, these target zip codes, or I guess whatever areas that you're talking about. So not only just reaching out to all these two communities that are underserved, you also make an effort to reach out to pit bull owners specifically. Is that part of what you're doing?
I mean, pit bulls, as you know, populate the shelter so much. And so often it's the pit bull owners that need the heartworm prevention and need more of the education. And they're a hard breed to own. You know, they've got high drive and high energy. And so sometimes it's wonderful to reach them. And if, say, they have their dog, and we ask them, where does your dog live? And often it's in the backyard, in the garage at night. And sometimes with just a little bit of exercise or teaching them how to play the right game of fetch, they can get their dog's energy level low enough to be able to bring them in the house. And so we want to reach those owners for so many reasons. You know, we have a lot of students in the classroom too that own pits.
Yeah. Think about a pit bull that I don't think people really. I don't know, Joe. I could be wrong. You know about you know this, and I know this, but Joe, you guys, the experiences that you've had with these great dogs. They're a terrier in a bulldog body, and we all know the terriers, very high energy dogs. And here you have this dog that is like built muscular, a lot of them, and you know, very, in some cases, powerful dogs, the Amstaffs and the Staffy Bulls, they're still a terrier. And so you're also, you know, working with people it also more bringing the dog into the family and instead of a yard ornament, so to speak.
That is true. You know, it's so true. And we adore pit bulls. I mean, we love pit bulls. But pit bulls have become a symbol for so many. And a lot of people buy or breed pit bulls because of what they symbolize. And without recognizing exactly what you just stated about their basic nature being terrier, and there's a lot to deal with. And people that don't have a lot of time for their dogs and people that are going to put them in a garage or chain them to a fence, no dog should be subjected to that.
Yeah.
I was going to say just one of the things that we talked to the students about in the classroom is how we've domesticated dogs for 15,000 years. And we talk about the domestication process and how these dogs are now they're our family members. They have a second socialization period where you can socialize them to people. They read facial expressions. They are truly a part of our family, and they should be treated that way. And so we talk about breeds and the type of, you know, the 7 or 8 breed groups that are out there and how you choose a dog to fit your family. And so that's something we really stress in the schools.
And the other
That's the biggest part on this is education, because a lot of people just go out and buy a dog without researching it. And, you know, hitting back on the terrier thing, I mean, you know, terriers were originally bred for high-energy hunting dogs. So, you know, you have to have an exercise program. You have to have, well, or an example like Cricket. My dog, my service dog goes with me, a mental program going out and working as a service dog or something to help burn that energy, or it just pits up and these dogs quickly get out of control.
Well, that's true, and we see that with our students who do have pit bulls. These families typically don't have the time or recognize a lot of qualities just generally about dogs. I mean, we're teaching empathy in the classroom, but a lot of people, and even our primary ambassador who, Patrick, you and I have spoken about, Chucky, who died last year. You know, until we got to Chucky and until we really, you know, reached him beyond just the Chucky that kind of existed in the neighborhood, he had no idea that dogs have feelings. He never considered their feelings. He never thought about what they needed. All he thought about is he wanted a dog. He wanted a dog to listen to him. And he wanted a dog to look a certain way and act a certain way. And if the dog didn't respond, then he punished him. Chucky used to dog fight.
Yeah.
He never considered their feelings. When he did recognize a dog's feelings, he completely reversed his stance on everything he had done. Chucky won $180,000 in his last dog fight and had somebody come into his house and try and steal his dog. You know, in his culture, recognition of feelings and empathy for in relationships with animals was just not a factor. And we introduced him to that, and he introduced his community to that and made so many changes. And that's what needs to happen in these communities.
Yeah. That's got to be a very difficult thing to do, to you know, to be known as this guy, and I'm sure he was known as a guy who bred and fought dogs, to make that kind of a change. And then, I mean, how do you know how the community reacted to that? How they, you know, looking at him for this, was he accepted? And people thought, whoa, this is, you know, or do you, how did that impact his?
Chucky started out with a lot of respect from the community, and he had a tire shop in a very high risk zip code. And it was an anchor in that zip code. And he did a lot for the community. He was a church-going man, and he was always helpful. He would help the kids sell waters. He was always trying to do for the community. He fathered 15 children and tried to instill good lessons in them. When he changed and he made a dramatic change, he shared all of that love and all of those changes with the community who already trusted him and feared him. He was a feared presence, which, you know, also helped garnish respect in his community. And he included us, and in welcoming me and Lindsay, and in welcoming the inner pup, and we had clinics at his tire shop, we benefited from his love and trust that he had gotten from the community. We became like an extension of Chucky to others in the neighborhood. And we felt very safe. You always felt safe with Chucky. Nobody was going to cross Chucky.
Great.
Hey, guys,
this is a call-in show.
Chucky. Oh, go ahead.
Yep. You're right. 929-477-2860. 929-477-2860. Advocates, we're with Gene and Lindsay from the Inner Pup in New Orleans, talking about the pit bulls and heartworm and all the other education things that you guys are doing down there. So give us a call. Ask questions, comments, 929-477-2860. Go ahead, Jean.
I was going to say we have two basic programs, our two core programs, and I think it would be good for us to delineate those a little bit. I think I should talk about the Heartworm program and Lindsay, the education program, just to give a good overview. Mm-hmm. And I think it might generate some call-ins. Basically, you know, the Heartworm program, as we said earlier, we started in April of 2016, and we've conducted monthly clinics every month since then. And we referenced, you know, a rough number of the dogs and doses of meds that we've given out. Based on the response in our community, which has been tremendous, and we've also gotten tremendous response from the veterinary community. We had a little bit of pushback initially because people thought we were giving away free shoes outside of a shoe store kind of a thing, but that quickly faded, and now we have over 10 rotating vets who rotate at our clinics monthly, as well as we have a primary vet who, you know, is helps us as far as giving us permission to order medications. But because of the success of this, we have put together and are in process of releasing over this summer a national protocol. And for any vulnerable region where mosquitoes are a large problem, this protocol and handbook is going to allow any nonprofit for free to open up their own heartworm prevention clinic that will mirror what we do as far as giving them all the forms and procedures. And we even include a video with that. So it's in the process of being designed. We've also,
because
of our clinic, we're going to present at the American Heartworm Symposium. We submitted an abstract on our novel program and on the treatment study. And we have been accepted for a poster presentation at this big research symposium in September in New Orleans. And
awesome.
That's a huge honor. It's a huge honor for us, basically, because this is
yeah.
a veterinary community, a very scientific body. So for them to recognize a community program is just wonderful. And we have a national advisor. His name is Sheldon Rubin. He is a retired veterinarian from Chicago. He's been a huge advocate for us, and he's a past president of the American Heartworm Symposium, the American Heartworm Society, I'm sorry. And he is actually presenting our program at a shelter conference in Southern Illinois in June. So we are getting national recognition, and we are also in contact with a perfectly wonderful man who has put forth a program through the University of Tennessee School of Social Work. And it is the program he has put in forth is a result of a huge study and survey that was done called Equity of Vet Care. Equity of Veterinary Care. And the program that has come out of that is called Align Care. And it is an effort to bring low-cost basic services to a community that desperately needs veterinary help. And we're in contact. We're so supportive of what he's doing. And, you know, these are just a few of the organizations that we're working with and partnering with who have, because of our efforts, recognized the importance of veterinary care for low-income clients and for their dogs, and the importance of heartworm disease that occurs outside the reach of veterinary services. So that's kind of what I wanted to say about heartworm, and I'm going to leave it to Lindsay because she knows so much about the education program, and we're in the midst of a two-week education program right now. So here's Lindsay.
All right. Hey, Lindsay, let me ask
yeah.
you. First off, when you enter a classroom, some of the things that you open up. Speaking to the kids, I imagine. Did you do grade school and middle school and high school, or where is your main focus first? Is it with the younger?
Yeah. We start with we've been in fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And so starting. Yeah.
No, okay, so some of the things that you lead into with that, what are some of the things that you get, you start your dialogue with these kids?
We're pretty honest with them. So it's the curriculum's teacher taught. So this year it's a Common Core curriculum that the teachers have learned through our educational director, Julia. And the teachers are teaching this curriculum. It's not us. But we go into the classrooms with our dog teams, and we'll talk about the inner pup. So when we walk into the classrooms, we tell them, you know, we just come from the heart that we're here in this community, that they live in a target community, that a lot of the dogs we see in the shelters come to the shelters because of their neighborhoods, from their neighborhoods.
mm-hmm. and that they're the future. They can change this, that if they love dogs, here are some choices that they can make. It's up to them. And, you know, we're pretty straightforward with them about that, which I think is really powerful. It's the culture in these neighborhoods we work with is really an honest, straightforward culture of talk. You know, they don't beat around the bush much, so it gives us the opportunity to also not beat around the bush.
Yeah. Are you hearing feedback from parents? Have you had any resistance from parents, or what are the types of things that you hear back after you know, maybe the course the child's going to go home, they're going to talk to the parents about, you know, what went on in school that day. What kind of things feedback are you getting from the parents on this?
We haven't gotten much feedback from the parents. I think that I'm not sure how involved the parents are in their child's education. We've gotten no pushback from the parents. We do see a few of the clients at our clinics, and, you know, some of the kids will say, "I saw you. You were in my school last year," and we'll get a chance to meet their parents. But most of them sign the permission slip. Oh, are we back?
Uh-huh.
Sorry.
You're
most
good.
Of them sign the permission slips to go on the field trip. And we truly don't hear so much. The kids go back into their communities with flyers to the next upcoming clinic with more information on summer camps and how they can be more involved. And then, you know, when we spoke, it was just a few days ago, where the teacher said, we were talking about respect, and the teacher said, "Is it respect to your dog to leave them outside all day and all night for 2 days straight?" And a lot of the kids laughed, like, "No way I would ever do that." And then a lot of the kids stopped and just went silent, as if to question, is that so wrong? You know, we get some of these kids probably going home questioning their parents' actions with their dog, which is what we want. We want them to be empowered to know the right decision and bring it home.
We can learn. Yeah. We can learn a lot from our kids. We've got to give them a little bit more credit than I think a lot of people give them. You know, especially when it comes to things like animal welfare and how we treat our animals. And that's how, you know, we get into, you know, we're talking about Chucky getting into that. Our good friend Foster Quarter was talking about addressing the cultural issues. And Foster Quarter is an African-American male. He grew up in those communities. He understands those communities. And one of the things he brought up was the cultural issue. And whenever any of the advocacy groups had brought this subject up, he would say it was deemed as racist and it got swept under the rug. And we had done a show on that, and I think we really need to touch base on that again. It was the black, white, and brown of animal advocacy. And one thing he said, that if we do not address those issues, we're going to end up with another 50,000 Michael Vicks. It starts with the kids' advocates. And like I say, a lot of these kids in these communities don't get that by no fault of their own. And they may get involved in illegal dog dog fighting activities and so on, or enter the inner pup. You guys have the power to completely change an entire generation of kids with a simple message of empathy and compassion and an understanding that these things, to hurt these animals is wrong. To care for these animals is why we have them. We make a commitment to that. And thank you guys for doing that. It's so important what you're doing.
Yeah,
you know, and there's a lot of organizations out there, you know, the advocacy groups. And Joe, honestly, that's one thing that we've never actually touched on was the youth end of it, you know, and discussing, talking about the children. How do we approach our children and the types of values that we can instill in them? It's one thing I don't, you know, other until this moment,
yeah.
I don't think we've ever really touched on that. It's very crucial to our end goal here, you know.
We haven't touched a lot on it on the show here, but we have been in the efforts for the last 3 years trying to get involved into the school district here to educate early on about pit bull and bully breeds, and unfortunately, we just haven't had a whole lot of uptake on it here.
You know, it's really hard. I'm sorry, what, Bunty?
Hi. Sorry. It's really hard to get into the schools. And we were so fortunate to have a teacher who had been at this charter school for 4 years and was pretty much best friends with the principal so that we could get into this particular school system. But we definitely have had pushback, and I think that's one of the hardest parts of the program. But if you're persistent, you talk to the right people, and you get in with the right teachers. We found that getting in with the actual teachers themselves rather than the administration and principals, it has been the way to go. We've thought about getting involved with bigger groups like Teach for America and finding our teachers that are interested to teach this that way. But the actual curriculum that we're teaching is something we're happy to share with people. If there's other animal welfare groups that think that our particular curriculum would work in their communities, we'd love to get them involved in it too. I think, you know, the faster we can spread education, the faster we can solve the problem. And
if someone wants to get in touch with you on getting your program into their school, how would they contact you? Give us an email address or even if you have a contact phone number, how would people get in touch with you to bring this to their schools?
They can email me straight at lindsay@theinnerpup.org. Lindsay is LINDSAY
at theinnerpup.
Yes.
And we'll get that up on our page there too.
And Patrick, want to learn more about heartworms or they're interested in our program at all, they can also email me at jeanGENE@theinnerpup.org. But I did want to add one thing that Lindsay, you know, was talking about with the education program and the background of so many of the students in the classroom and what they may be lacking or things that need to be undone before they can then be done. But there's the stories they tell us. The stories would melt your heart. I mean, of their own experiences with animals, and you know, a lot of them tend to have natural empathy that they're not able to express in their home life and in their families because sometimes their families, so it gives them an opportunity to vent and to share some of their stories and a little bit of their lives with us, and that's so satisfying. But humane education is needed in every school system. There is no one, we believe, who wouldn't benefit from the values that we stress.
Yeah.
Should mention our website. We should give out our website, which is www.theinnerpup.org.
And we'll get all that up on our Facebook page here after the end of the show here. Lindsay, I think it was you were talking about you know, when you're trying to get these this program into the school system, you talked about some pushback. What kind of things were you know, any sort of resistance were you getting? What was their response to you when you first approached them about your program?
Well, it's interesting because other organizations have actually come to us saying, how on earth did you get into the school systems in New Orleans? Some of the bigger groups here have called us on that. It was not easy. So some of the pushback was, well, first you're calling these teachers, and although maybe they've expressed interest before, they have no time. And so you don't hear back from people for months. And so that alone is pretty discouraging. Oftentimes you hear back and they say, wait, we're still interested. I'm so sorry. I was so busy. I can't believe it. You know, apologies. And then we were scheduled to get into six schools this year. And the public school systems they're constantly changing and changing their schedule. And so it was,
excuse me,
this year,
Lindsay, it's the charter schools.
Yeah.
Lindsay, it's the charter schools in New Orleans. They're not public schools. We're in the charter school system. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. How does that work opposed to a regular charter system? How does that work differently than a public education system?
The way that I understand it is that they're very similar, except charters can receive outside finances. So charter schools are often privately funded, along with city funded. And I know there's a lot of controversy in the school systems, and I'm not an expert in it, so someone might correct me.
I can say one thing. Charter schools have kind of become much more popular since Katrina. New Orleans changed dramatically after Hurricane Katrina, and that's sort of when the charter school system became very popular. And now there are a number of national charter schools that are in New Orleans area, and they're terrific. I mean, it's a much better school system than we had prior to Katrina.
But they're still not quite good enough. And so when we scheduled something, we had six classrooms scheduled. We were scheduled to be working with 600 students, and we had teachers tell us last minute that they had to teach this other curriculum that was a test curriculum. So I'm so sorry, we can't do it this year. Or they're constantly changing their schedules up, especially after testing, and that's when our program runs. And so we're talking about different times of year to do our program to be more successful and get into more classrooms. But we definitely have so that's been some of our pushback. I know that there was so much pushback with the ASCCA's program that they canceled their education program. I know that education is not an easy program to manage and be successful, and we're not stopping. You know, we're in it for the long haul.
You know what? They need to see the value. They need to recognize the value of humane education more, because when they put us behind testing at the end of the year, there's a lot of kids who don't show up for school after testing's complete. It's kind of, we're low man on the totem pole, and we hope next year and years to come that more schools will recognize the importance of humane education and in relationship building, because that's what we really do. I mean, Patrick, we try to tell people, and it's so true, that we are not just an animal welfare organization, that basically we use dogs as a gateway to develop better relationships between people and better relationships between people and dogs. And it should be an integral part of education. So we are going to go strongly for that.
It should be right up there with the arts, music, sports activities, humane education. It absolutely
is.
There's definitely a place in there.
Good. Would you like to be president of the school board in New Orleans?
Who, me?
We would welcome that. Well, I'm kidding. I mean, We need somebody who recognizes the values and who welcomes us and invites us and more people like us. And
I mean, there's so much more we can do with this, and we really appreciate you guys coming on here so we can share your program here with everybody.
Thank you.
With how involved, the pit bulls and the and of course we talk about the dog fighting. How big is that in New Orleans from what you've seen? How big of a problem is dog fighting in your area?
Well, I can tell you that in Louisiana, we don't have counties. We have what's called parishes. And in other parishes, and especially in rural parishes, we have recently gotten reports of bad fighting. There's a lot of it, and it's endemic, and it's not only endemic, but that it is overlooked by law enforcement because they probably have a stake in it. We've heard about families that have been involved for generations that are still immersed in dog fighting. Luckily, in New Orleans, it is not center stage. And we've talked to a couple of veterinarians who don't see a lot of it, who don't see dogs who are coming to dog fights. They're seeing some different trends with bullies, and I'll let Lindsay talk about it. She knows more about actually different specifics with bully breeds. But we're not seeing a lot of fighting, but having said that, it still goes on in target zip codes, but not to the degree that we are hearing about it in rural parishes all throughout Louisiana.
Is this something you talk about with the kids, dog fighting?
It is something we talk about with kids, and when we brought in Chucky, when Chucky was still with us, he would come into the classrooms with us. We also have another ex-dog fighter. His name is Cedric. He went to jail for it, and he'll come into the classrooms as well, and he's really relatable to these kids. They love him. We've got a few guys that come into the classes that the kids really want back in the classrooms, really good role models in their community. But before Katrina, as I understand, there was dog fighting 10 minutes away from our house up on the levee. That was a prime location for 3 a.m. Saturday nights. So it's on a smaller scale because you can't hide it as much in the city. You can hide it much better in rural communities. And I think that's what's happening more and more. But I don't know. I can't speak to other cities.
Yeah. Cedric is somebody that I'd like to talk to. If you guys go ahead and give him my contact. We talked about getting
Cedric,
Chucky.
We will do that. Patrick, Cedric now has totally reformed also, and he works for a citywide for the recreational park district. And he works with kids all the time. And these are the kinds of people that we need, because directly engaging with these kids and telling them and teaching them what's right and wrong and teaching them no better way, as we all know, to teach than from experience. So he's a great role model for these kids, and he does work with a NORD program in New Orleans, which is the New Orleans Recreation District. And he's at these games with the kids and with their little leagues. So these are the kind of people that we need in the city. And he came into our school program and talked, and he's coming again this year to talk.
We'll send him his contact.
Let's get him on. Yeah, let's get him let's get him on the show, Joe. Are you there, Joe? Hello.
Yeah, I'm here.
I know he's on the line. Okay. I would say I know I got your mic on. Joe, you know, we're you know talk about the dogfighting thing, and there was something going on right damn near in your backyard not that long ago.
Yes, there was.
With these idiots, so to speak.
Yeah, we had a fighting ring just up the hill across the valley from us, and they'd wait until rush hour traffic about midweek so it helped cover up the noise. But I could hear it from my barn, so once we were sure what we were hearing, we turned it in, and it was cleared out within a week.
Wow.
And there you have it. There you have
Wow.
That's one thing we had talked about on the past episode was how how to recognize the signs of what to look for as far as the traffic in and out of places. A lot of dogs being brought in and out. You know, a lot of people showing up. And those sorts of things. Like you said, it was I believe it was Jean. You said Sabrina is back there playing the piano. Thanks, girl. Don't know if you guys heard that. I've got a cat walking across the piano. We have to thank you, girl, every day. Kind of lost where I was going with this one. But, you know, to recognize these signs and how to report it. And then some people go, well, what if you're wrong? And you go, well, if you're wrong, you're wrong. But if you're right, like Joe, you were aware of certain activities and you were confident enough that this is something that should at least be reported, and boom, brought them down.
I have to tell you, Patrick, that of a specific example that I've encountered recently, someone who actually adopted a dog that we had at our country refuge, and she lives in a little bit of a rough and part of town, and she lives on a cul-de-sac, and she is pretty confident that there is dog fighting going on, and all the signs and whatever you would expect, from the noise to the people, and she has reported it over and over, and the only person who has really responded has been an off-duty policewoman who has tried to get people on active duty in the police force to look into it. She has not been successful to get anyone. That there's so many people, I feel, in local communities who are benefiting from this financially. And, she has, it's ongoing. She's afraid to go over there and look any closer. She's actually afraid in her neighborhood. She has a pit bull. She's afraid to let him out. And not on a leash, she won't do it. And this is the kind of thing that it's a problem. And even if you do report it, I can tell you personally that I reported it to two national organizations and had correspondence with each of these organizations for a period of time. They asked a lot of questions. We got photographs that they asked for. We did everything that they asked us to do and never heard from them again. And we had people who are pretty networked and important in these organizations who reached out to people they knew who are designated, it's their responsibility to investigate dog fighting. And we still never heard from them.
This goes back to where you're saying that these officials and certain members of law enforcement, like you say, may be involved in this activity, and that would
absolutely.
That would be definitely where my mind was going. And Joe, we talked last week about Iowa Senator Representative I don't know, Gene Lindsay. I don't know if you're familiar with this guy. I can't remember his name. Basically calling for dogfighting to be legalized, and his reasoning is, well, if we can watch two men fight in a ring, then why can't we watch dogs fight in a ring? And just the shit that comes out of this guy's mouth, and it makes me kind of think, what does he do with his off time? What does he do with his off time? And here's the thing, you guys, advocates, you don't have to be present anymore. We're in a digital age. All you got to do is make a fucking phone call. Maybe you go to a website and you place your bets, and you don't even have to be there. Yet you just sit back and you wait for the money to come in when the dog wins a fight. This guy,
Lindsay's, on Instagram, and I mean, people are out in the open, and you can find it everywhere.
You know, I've thought about this for a while. I've thought about this for a while, and we were talking to the vet the other day, and we said, do you know any dog fighters? Because this particular vet does a lot of breeding, and he helps assisted breeding and with the bullies, because oftentimes they need help with their pregnancies, just the way they're built. And we said, what are you seeing now? And he said, these dogs are going for $25,000, but they're not fighting them. They're in the show ring with them. And we've talked a lot about getting an agility class started. We don't have enough dog trainers in the city right now to do it, but if there was a way to just make all these pit bulls into a competitive agility ring, enough.
Well, it's great that you can transfer their drive. If you can transfer their drive into something that's productive and something that is positive, that's terrific.
And something they can make money on.
Well, that's true too. But I also think there's depravity involved in it. I think that there's some real pathology and sickness involved in enjoying the suffering, and it's something cultural and symbolic, and I hate to think that way, but I do think that it is part of it, and that's why dog fighting thrives.
I mean, Gene, you talk about welcome back, Joe. Chucky and Cedric, former dog fighters that y'all personally know, and you hear their stories, and to get somebody that actually gets out of that, and to show some empathy, and to know and to understand what they've done was morally just wrong. And then you've got your Mike Vick. I'm sorry, I never got the chance to speak with Chucky, and I look forward to talking with Cedric, but to get individuals that will be, to reform that, you can never really put it behind you, because I know when I talk to Cedric, it's going to be in my head that this is what this guy did. But I want to hear his story. And I don't think it's going to be the same story as Mike Vick, where you just, you're just running around, you're a talking head, and you say, don't fight dogs and blah, 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 blah. I don't get that from Vick. I don't get that. If he could go back into it, he would. If he could go back and get away with it, I know he would. His brother, Marcus, is still breeding dogs, and I'm just going to go out there and say I've got a really good idea where those dogs are going. And that in itself, breeding dogs for fighting is a crime. And that's where I'm getting at those dogs are going. And I really hope they nail that son of a bitch here again sometime soon.
Patrick,
and it really wouldn't surprise me.
Patrick, I've got a question for you. I mean, you're in Arizona. What is the situation there with pit bulls and with fighting?
I'm sure it's there. I haven't heard of any big bust or anything like that. I was born and raised in California, real quick, and I moved to Arizona in 2013, 2014 to Mesa. And my first experience with the people that I met that had pit bulls were all within this condo that we moved into. 14 other pit bulls in this complex. Every one of them out, you know, you see them. There are areas where we can walk. It's you know, we're down in the valley. It's, you know, you're talking, you know, you get 115 degrees in the summertime. So there were these shaded areas where we could, you know, take our dogs. But to see these dogs out every day, the way I saw these people that treated their dogs, most of the males I saw were neutered. Thank you, guys. Awesome. But just nothing. I never really heard anything about, you know, the dog fighting realm out there. There's no. And I'm north of Prescott right now, and I still haven't heard.
It's
I'm in a very rural area.
Community. It's a rural area, but is it affluent?
Or where I'm at now? Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely
but
not.
What you're seeing?
We are so rural. We don't have a downtown. We have a Safeway.
Okay. But what you're seeing is good owners, and are they mostly shelter pit bulls, or are they bred pit bulls for the most part? Are they mixes? Or just interested in and how does this differ from, would you say, the population of dogs from 20 years ago as far as pit bull percentages?
Oh, man. It's been almost just over 15 years in advocacy. So I've seen a lot. I mean, with the people that I had come in contact through when I was in California, I had this a neighbor who's a really nice guy. He's a Latino guy. Really nice guy, and he had this beautiful blue boy Oso, but he put a chain. He had this. It wasn't a heavy chain. It was, you know, it was a chain with a padlock on it. And I told him, "You've got this beautiful dog here," and he walked him. I see him walk him every day. He loved this dog. His children loved this dog. He brought the dog in the house, but there's this one thing. It was somewhat, dude, lose the chain. I've got a great leather collar at home I'll give you. Lose your chain. So I think this collar looked great. You know what he did? He lost the chain because that was where he grew up.
Mm-hmm.
He put these chains on their dogs because he thought it made his dog look badass. I'm like, dude, your dog is already badass. He's beautiful. He's stunning. He's well behaved.
Right.
And I said, I tell you right now, if you go down to the shelter next month, you can have those nuts cut off for free. He's all, really? I'm all, yeah. You know what? He did it.
Great.
You know, I haven't really been in any situation where anybody around me I thought was fighting their dogs. There were a situation where a dog was being neglected that we had tried to get involved with. The shelter didn't want to do anything about it. And apparently this guy had left. He went back to visit family in Mexico, and his cousin or somebody was supposed to be taking care of this dog, and he wasn't. The neighbor was feeding the dog. And animal control said, well, as long as the dog's being fed. And I said, the freaking neighbor's feeding the dog. They're not even taking care of this dog. I said, oh, by the way, he's beautiful. He looked like a wreck then, but he's a beautiful Staffordshire Bull Terrier. And I said, he's a pit bull and he's not neutered. And they go, oh, well, we can't do anything about that. I'm like, really? I said, because the county law says that you can't. And they go, oh, well, we can't do anything about that. So, like you, you know, try to deal with certain things out there. We took control of the situation and offered to take the dog. And they gave us the dog. Oh, you can take him.
Wow.
Okay. I said, well, what's his name? And he paused and he goes, Fluffy. And he laughs. And I thought, if there weren't six other guys behind him, you know, so, yeah, I don't see the things that you guys see, you know, and that's why we get
right.
on
well,
here,
that's
really.
Good to hear.
Cause,
that's
know.
Good to hear. We love hearing that, that we love hearing that what we do see in, you know, in our city, where there is a lot of diversity and a lot of low income, that's not the rule everywhere. And, you know, we, of course, Patrick, we have incredible pit bull owners. And pit bulls that end up in shelters get adopted by incredible families, but they are dying in shelters at a rate higher than practically any other dog. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
yeah.
they're at a disadvantage.
That's pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, and they're
yeah.
at a disadvantage. They're harder to adopt. They're not a dog for everyone. They're not a dog for small apartments. They're not a dog for people whose lifestyles don't allow them to, you know, give them the stimulation and exercise they need. But they do...
Yeah.
I can say one thing, that there's a lot less reluctance to adopt a pit bull than there was, I would say, 10 years ago. That people, my friends, people I knew well, thought of pit bulls as dangerous dogs. And now, maybe because they've been, they're primarily, what you see in shelters are mixes, and primarily and secondarily because so many of their friends have also adopted pit bulls, that there's a lot less resistance to adopt and to be owned by a pit bull than there was 10
yeah.
years ago. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. You know, with that in mind, hey, guys, we're down to last 7. We're going to have to cut this off here real quick. But Lindsay and Gene, I definitely want you guys back. And when I'm in New Orleans, I'm going to look you guys up, and hopefully we can schedule a short show with you guys there. It'd be great. But Gene, what you touched on there in the last 10 years, and a personal experience was with my own mother. Talk about that resistance of Patrick got a pit bull. You know, my father being a very, very smart man, worked in aerospace, Skylab, Apollo, Mars Lander, all that stuff, just came off with the most ridiculous pit bull, about every pit bull myth that you could throw at a person. But the one thing that in my girl, she was probably about 8 or 9 years old at that time, when I moved from California to Arizona, my mother walked over to our car and says, I gotta say goodbye to Bean. She went up there and she pet her on the face, you know, and everything. And I said, well, what about Shavaya, who's our big blue boy? She goes, one at a time. And I thought myself and in my heart, one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
One at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we do it, Advocates.
Well, you
so,
know what, I have to just add one thing, and that is that Lindsay and I have both DNA'd our dogs, our current dogs, and my claim to fame is that my latest rescue is 12.5% pit bull. So I just love that she is, and Lindsay's dog has a proportion of pit bull too, and I know she loves that. So,
yeah. Who couldn't love that? I love these dogs, Joe, and I, you know, this how Joe and I met was through through the social media and the advocacy and our love for these dogs, and that's why we got you two here, Lindsay, Jean. And it's all about the dogs, not just the pit bulls, you guys. It's all about the dogs, the compassion, teaching our children right from wrong. I've got some great memories of my own children working with the rescue dogs that I have, watching my daughter walk a dog that outweighed her by a good 25-30 pounds, you know. You guys are fucking awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We're gonna have you back. Thank you guys for coming in. I love these Sunday morning shows. I'm awake.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. All the Inner Pup here, Lindsay and Jean Goldring from the Inner Pup in New Orleans, doing some great things for the dogs down there and working with Tia and everybody at Villa Lobos, working for the communities, man, because that's really where we're at. Thank you so much. Guys, next week, it's kind of an up in the air. Dog Father, you know, Joe, I'm going on tour, my friend. And we're gonna be doing some shows from the road. The one I'm really looking forward to is it could come up a little bit sooner than later. Is working with this great band out of UK called Conflict. They're really big into the animal advocacy world, and can't wait to see if we can't get that on. But anyway, you guys, thanks for being here for us on a Sunday morning. We appreciate everything you do for us. So, everything that you do for the dogs. So keep it up, man. And remember, guys,
thank you.
Never give in.
Never give up.
Never give up.
Well, I was going to say good night, but how about have a great day, everybody. Enjoy your Sunday. We hope you have a great weekend. Thanks for being here. We love you all. Thank you. Good day.
Have a great day.